Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need, from athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace, to nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist! Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Savage Arms. We all know that the human body comes in all different shapes and sizes. However, most firearms do not. That is why Savage Arms has rolled out their AccuFit system on the 110 platform. AccuFit uses interchangeable components that allow hunters to custom fit both comb height and the length of pull without taking their rifle to a gunsmith. In fact, the only tool you need is a Phillips head screwdriver. If you want to find out more information about the AccuFit customization system, visit savagearms.com.
Welcome to the Missouri Woods and Water Podcast. I'm your host, Nate Thomas. Joining me tonight.
Me?
Micah?
Yeah, I never know how to do that
anymore. I know. This started a few weeks ago, and I've just...
Had fun with it.
I have ran with it ever since.
Yeah, okay.
So it's fun every time. You just don't know what I'm going to do.
Don't know if you're going to introduce me or if I got to say my own name, which is fine. It's whatever.
Or just say me?
Yeah, me. Everybody knows me.
So how's it going?
Going good, man. The cold looks like it's gone away, so work's finally starting to slow down a little bit, which is nice because we've been running really hard the last few weeks, been really busy. So
this episode won't come out for a few weeks. We're recording this episode on February 23rd, and it was like 68 degrees today.
Yeah, it was gorgeous out. It was great. The sun was shining. Got warm, had to take my hoodie off. It was great. Good day.
Especially, sure. I had the windows down in the car.
Yeah, same.
I had to go to St. Louis for work today, and I had the window down all the way there. Well, not all the way there. I was driving at 6 in the morning there. But
yeah, that might be
all chilly. The way back, it was great.
Yeah.
So.
But today, we had our buddy Ty on again from Heartland Bowhunter, and we talked shed hunting. We also finished up his season and everything that he had going on, and then we jumped into shed hunting and he gave us some tips and tricks and talked a little bit about he runs a dog as well for sheds. So
Ty made a giant mistake inviting us over to his house the first time we recorded the episode about Dreamer. because we saw these sheds that he finds and talked about shed hunting. And so immediately we were like, we need to talk to him about shed hunting.
Yeah, he knows a thing or two, so, for sure.
So he was subjected to us yet again in this episode.
And
so
graciously enough, he accepted.
Yeah. So it's a really good episode. I learned quite a bit. I don't shed hunt very often, even less this year because of all the coyote hunting we've been doing.
Yeah,
that's taking my time. So
right, and that with the kids and everything.
But yeah, that too.
I do usually when it warms up a little bit more. I try to take Brindley out and, you know, do a little bit of walk around. We've got some public ground pretty close to my house. And I mean, we never really find much, but it's always fun to get out in the woods. You know, it's finally, the temperatures are finally getting to where you can get out, especially with the kids. It's not too cold. And just get out in the woods a little bit and get some fresh air. So that's always nice.
Yep. So today, like I said, we have Ty on and we're going to get into it.
Yep.
Got anything else?
Nope.
All right. This is the Missouri Woods and Water Podcast. All right, with us today, returning guest, Ty Easley with Heartland Bowhunter. How's it going?
Oh, it's going good, guys.
How's life been treating you since the last time we talked?
Well, life has always been good. the hunting was a little slow late season, or should I say, I guess, when did we talk? When was that in?
Well, it was the story about Dreamer.
Yeah.
Well, it was October, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, so not too long after I shot him.
It was the next night, I'm pretty sure, if I remember right, or the day.
It had to be recent because he was in your freezer.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure it was a day or so before, right after you killed him.
Okay. Yeah. So, other than that, I've had a bunch of people ask me, "Oh, how was your season?" I was like, "Well, I can't really say it was my worst season ever because I killed the biggest buck I ever killed in Missouri."
Sure. Yeah.
But if that hadn't happened, it would have been a pretty rough season because I never did. Get one with my dad or my daughter or a couple of my buddies that I hunt with. Nobody else ended up scoring or getting one. So it finally got to the point where late season, my daughter hadn't shot one. And I was like, babe, we need some meat for the freezer. So if you're not going to get one, then I better get. So I ended up getting out and getting a doe late season.
Okay,
so that
there you
was,
go. And you guys
fun.
Hit it hard, too. I was following you guys your stories and stuff like that. And you guys hit it hard. And
yeah,
that stinks that it didn't come together there.
Yeah, no doubt. My daughter was, she started off, I think she started hunting about 7 years ago, and she killed one her first year, then didn't kill one her second year, then killed one her third year, and now she's like on a 4 or 5 year dry spell.
Oh,
so she's starting to be like...
Is it because she's picky?
Yeah.
Or are you picky for her?
No.
Or how's that work?
I think it might be a little bit of both. I mean, she's killed a couple, nice bucks. So we've kind of, all on that page of shooting kind of 4 or 5 year old deer better. Mm-hmm. And the last 3 years it's been, she shot one 3 years ago and hit him high. And so we've been pretty much after that deer for 3 years in a row now since she hit him
high.
She's
kind of tunnel vision.
So, yeah. So, and last year, we saw him, had a close call, didn't happen. And then this season, we never did lay eyes on him, unfortunately. So
that's too bad.
We've seen a couple other ones, but just didn't work out.
Was he still showing up on camera and everything?
Yeah, that was the worst part. It was weird, though. This year, typically, once the whitetails that I hunt get that 6 years, that usually 4 and 5 years, especially 5 years old, is when they're typically the most nocturnal. Well, for some reason, him this year at 6 years old, he was really nocturnal. I had a few pictures of him in daylight, and we just couldn't catch up with him. But, the food sources that he was on the previous year in late season, usually he was showing up in daylight quite a bit. And this year it just wasn't the case. He was just getting there. I don't know if he's bedding too far away, which I assume kind of the case. And like I said in the other last time we all got together, there's other guys that hunt that property. So I think that had a little bit to do with it. I think they were kind of
a little pressure on them.
A little pressure and moving around a little bit during daylight. I know a few of the guys, especially one of the guys that was moving around, checking different spots out. And I think he, just deer like that, they can't take that much pressure. They're going to.
Right. They're just going to hunker down and
turn nocturnal.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, I have to give you a official thank you because a few weeks after our episode, you held my hand after I shot my archery buck. that night. And
I don't know if I did too much.
Helped me feel better about the decision I was making to back out and if he was going to die and all that stuff. So I appreciate you doing that.
It sounded like it worked. It ended up working out good.
We did find him right where I left him. So that was that worked out well.
No doubt. That was a good one. Oh, you ended up getting another one, right? You ended up with two.
Yeah. Was it 2 and 6 days? I think, yeah.
Yeah, six or eight days, I can't remember.
It would have been six. I killed the archery buck the Monday before rifle season, and then the rifle buck opening.
So you came over and took all my mojo is what it was,
I think I did. I saw the deer.
Well, I didn't get crap. Right. So, I mean, I took a doe.
I took the mojo. You must not have gotten
it. Yeah, it didn't rub off on me. It was a fine year. I saw plenty of deer, but just nothing that I wanted to, put my tag on. Just those new properties and stuff like that, still figuring those out. And up north with rifle, it just didn't have anything that we wanted to, they needed another year or two before we, should really start hunting after them. So,
right.
That's just part of it, though.
Yeah. So,
I did have a quick funny story to share if we got just a second.
Yep.
My dad, I was hunting hard with him all year. He'll love this if he gets to hear it. And so the only encounter we had all year with him, it was early November, and we got in there. I took off early from work. We got in early, it was probably 2 o'clock or so and 2:30, and got up there about 3:30 rolls around. He's like, man, I need to use the restroom. And I'm like, oh. I was like, well, we still got a couple hours. I was like, if you're going to do it, if you got to go, go now, right? So he goes climbing out of the tree, gets about 40, 50 yards from the stand, and I look out back to the west through the timber, and I see antlers working our way. And I'm like, my heart just sinks. I'm like, are you kidding me? We've been hunting all this time, and this is how it's going to go down. And, of course, I'm trying to whistle to my dad, get his attention, trying not to, disturb the deer. And eventually the deer gets close enough and looks up the ridge and sees my dad heading off, walking up the hill. And so that was literally the only encounter we had with the shooter buck.
Did you get that on tape? You got him walking away, and then you pan down, you got the deer.
Right. I did get him walking away, and I tried to go to the deer, but it was kind of in some, it was still probably about 60 or 70 yards, and I didn't get great footage of the deer, but I just, it was one of those moments you just like, is this really happening?
Was it your dad at least unaware of what was going on at the time?
No clue.
So at least he got to go to the bathroom in peace.
Right.
It's Dan. He talks about, what does he call it? He calls it a sky dump or something.
Right. If I would have known, that's what I'd have told him. Actually, I'd have been like, just go, man. Just go, and we'll worry about it later. I won't tell anybody.
Yeah.
I can understand that feeling. You're in the tree, and you're just like, there's no way I'm making it to dark.
Right.
What do I need to do here?
Yeah, that's not a fun feeling. I've put my back against the tire a few times, before heading into the stand and stuff. It's no fun, but
no, but it's better to do it before, I guess.
And yeah, it happens. It definitely happens.
That's so, too bad.
Yeah.
That's when he shows
up. Bad timing. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So how things have been going at Heartland Bowhunter?
Oh, they're going good. Everybody, we all had a really good season again. Everybody, everybody on the team got at least one nice buck, and I know Mike and Sean both shot multiple nice bucks this year, and it was honestly another really good season. We keep, you're expecting to have a bad year eventually, right, when you've been doing it this long, but I think with the group of guys we got and, the opportunities and places that we have to hunt and just the time we put in and all the preparation, hard work pays off. So
somebody's bound to have success, hopefully.
Yeah, and that's the nice thing. Even if somebody does have an off year, usually there's we got 7 or 8 guys that really put in the time, and somebody's going to make up for it. Like my year last year, I really only had the one. Usually between me and my couple of my buddies and my daughter and my dad, I usually get 3 or 4 on video.
Yeah.
But yeah, this past year was just kind of a struggling year for myself.
That's sort of been, we're not Heartland Bowhunter, but in the Missouri Woods and Water family, in 2018, all three of us had,
we had
amazing
years.
Mm-hmm. 2019, Andy had a good year. I didn't kill anything, and
I didn't kill anything either.
And then this year I had a good year, and then Andy actually, he's not going to like hearing, you're not going to like reliving this, but Andy lost one. A good one that he shot that he lost.
It's still alive.
It's still alive. He didn't put a fatal shot.
He punched
it
right there in the shoulder and didn't get much penetration. So
he had that opportunity, but didn't end up capitalizing. And then Micah just didn't have it happen again. But so you're bound up. But at least so far, we've all, one of us has at least had a good year. And then in 1 year, we just really.
Yeah, it'd be nice to relive that year.
Oh, my goodness. It wasn't even just us three. I mean, it was all our buddies that we hunt with. Everybody just had a great year.
Yeah.
2018, if we could do that every year, that would.
We might be up there with Harlan Bowhunter.
Right. Ours was 2019 for me and that kind of my dad and me. And I think myself and four of my buddies all killed. And that was kind of our, you know, banner year, if you will. The only person that didn't kill that year was my daughter. So, but
yeah. Awesome. Well, good. So what we're getting into today is, I know we're sitting on today, it's February 23rd. This episode won't come out until somewhere in the beginning of March. And so deer are obviously starting to drop antlers, or already have. I've seen some that still have both sides. But so we're going to talk about shed hunting. Ty is a big shed hunter.
Yeah, looking at a few hundred right now.
A few hundred of them. So he loves shed hunting. He gets into dogs, and we'll get into all of that. So we're kind of just going to get into shed hunting and what Ty does when he goes out and kind of how he goes about shed hunting, because you obviously know how to do it.
Either that or you walk an ungodly amount of miles.
It's both. Yeah.
So I'm going to make an admission right here on this show that's going to make people upset with me probably, but – Ty, do you know how many sheds I have found in my life?
I do not.
The answer is this many.
Seriously?
I either am unlucky or I don't pay attention well enough.
It was zero.
It was zero, by the way.
Wow, that is surprising.
Yeah. I've got a brother-in-law, Russell, who's part of our group, and that kid can be on the back of an ATV 80 yards away from an antler laying on the ground and go, look, there's an antler.
Right.
And that literally is a story that happened with Russell, myself, and Andy. And it's either I just don't have an eye for it, or they're just not where I'm at.
Right.
Now, full transparency, I'm not shed hunting a lot.
Right.
But every property I hunt, I've walked them in years past, and I just don't find any. So,
I'm not great at it by any means. I've gone out a few times to specifically shed hunt and found a handful, but I'm definitely not up to your standards when it comes to it. So, but yeah, so we're definitely excited to hear some of those tips, tricks, and whatever information you have, really. Mm-hmm. So, because everybody, I mean, a lot of people get into it. I mean, it's, you know, it's becoming a really popular thing to do in a lot of
people. Yeah, there's no doubt it. It is way bigger than it was when I first started.
And you probably hate that.
Oh yeah, I do and I don't. I mean, it's fun. It's kind of like a scavenger hunt to go. You know, to go and look for them. So, honestly, one of the biggest things that, to me, one of the hardest things to do during shed season is to wait and to stay out of the woods until you know the deer. Either for me, a lot of times I'm looking for a specific deer, and you know, other times even if I'm not looking for a specific deer, I try to keep my cameras going. You know, until you know, middle, late March. And I've even seen deer, you know, as late as like the middle of April with both sides still on. That's probably the latest I've ever seen, you know, a nice 3-year-old 8-pointer, you know, still have both sides on.
That's a long time.
Is there any, I've heard, and you might know this, I've heard if they're in really good nutrition, they're really healthy, I hear that they hang on to their antlers longer. Do you know any truth of that?
Yeah. I mean, I totally, you know, believe that. I think anytime any deer is, you know, malnourished or, you know, wounded possibly from the season, run down from the rut, you know, whatever you want to call it or whatever it is, I definitely think those deer tend to lose their, you know, shed their antlers quicker. I'm sure it has something to do with, you know, just making sure that they have nutrients in their body and taking care of their body first and, you know, drop their antlers first. I'm not no scientist or anything like that, but I've definitely noticed that in the past of just watching deer. And anyone that is typically injured or really thin, you know, they are usually one of your first ones to drop more often than not.
Yeah, those nutrients won't go where they need to go up there, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what I guess to start, what are the reasons that you choose to shed hunt. I mean, obviously it's enjoyable, yes, but it also helps you with all kinds of other things.
Oh, like, yeah.
Getting intel on where deer are late season, you know, where he might have been bedding. What are the reasons you got into it in the first place, and then we'll just kind of go from there on some of your strategies.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, the main reason, obviously, I hunt is kind of like what you said. What is I just want to learn more about the deer, and especially a specific deer. Now I know you can say that a little loosely, because sometimes you know, you go out and you shed hunting and you might find a shed in this certain area, but that's not necessarily the area that buck stays in most of the time. Mm-hmm. Just because when you are shed hunting, the main thing that I look for first of all is food. I mean, because there's nothing more that drives a deer that time of year than his stomach, and then the cover. So if you can find where they're feeding at and where they're bedding at, I mean, that's a huge, huge part of shed hunting. And then, you know, just find the route that he's taken to and from. Now you always get those random sheds here and there where, you know, they're just maybe from somebody going in too early and bumping mm-hmm. deer around. And, you know, they drop in kind of those random places. That's why, to me, the biggest key and one of the most important things is waiting till that deer's dropped. If you can wait till they've dropped their antlers and you're not going in and pushing them around and running them off your property even and making them shed somewhere else, that's the biggest thing. But you get those places like, you know, public ground, which I shed hunt a bunch on public grounds. And I typically shed hunt those places sooner. Because
it doesn't necessarily matter.
Yeah, you know, it doesn't.
And more people are probably going to
be
in there.
So many people are going to be in and out of there. And part of that is just kind of getting lucky. You know, you're being there hopefully right after he drops them, because you could be in there one day and walk it all, and he drops them the next day, and another guy walks in right where you're at and pick them up. So it's kind of random. So that's what I typically do is shed hunt on public ground first and try to leave my spots alone as long as I can, and let the cameras tell me when they drop and then when I'm going in.
So you're still just going into your properties, getting your chips, coming back, and then you're just waiting, playing the waiting game.
Yep. Until you and especially sure. This year, with this cold weather, this extreme, in Missouri here, we've had some, temperatures we haven't seen since, I think they said like 89, you know, that cold.
We broke several records, I know that.
Yeah. So we've been we actually fed them through late season this year, which hopefully in turn will help kind of narrow our search down mm-hmm. for some of the sheds. But you know, we were taking alfalfa flakes and bales and then, you know, mixing that with corn and trying to help the herd get through. Cause we have quite a few bucks that we're really excited to hunt next year. And we wanted to, you know, help them get through that season.
It's pretty bad. You don't want to go out there and find a deadhead of one that you know,
kind of like
kept track of,
keeping your fingers crossed as you're walking through.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, if it were dead, you'd want to find it, but at the same time, that's the last thing you probably want to see laying there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is. It's definitely a double-edged sword. You definitely are like, oh, yeah, I'm glad I found it, but it can be, you know, more disappointing than anything. I'd much rather pick up their sheds than pick up their dead head, for sure.
Right. So you were, you know, a lot of it's obviously for intel, and you have, the way you hunt, you want your deer to get mature.
Right.
So you can have a lot of these deer that you might find their sheds for 4 straight years, potentially. What are some things, and you were telling us a little bit of story before we started recording that I'm sure you'll touch on here. What are the things you use from finding a particular deer's sheds year in and year out? I mean, how many times have you been able to find a specific buck's sheds more than once?
Yeah, so typically, you know, most of the deer we try to start hunting are generally about 5 years old. It used to be 4. Now, you know, these about the last 3 or 4 years, it's been 5 and older. So to find a buck's sheds more than, you know, 3 years in a row is pretty difficult to do. Mm-hmm. I've done it a couple times, maybe I think 2 or 3 times, where I've found at least 4 years of sheds to deer, which is pretty difficult to do, a wild whitetail. But most of the time I'll find a year, like Dreamer. I had 2 years of his sheds. And most of them, you know, and that's the other thing, you know, I may have had maybe a year and a half old shed from him or two and a half, but a lot of times you don't really start recognizing a deer until they, usually till they hit about 3 years old.
Yeah, once they get their own characteristics and stuff, and you can really pinpoint them.
Yeah. Right. Unless they got something really weird, you know, some real distinguishing feature. But usually it's a three-year-old before I start even, really before I even start even noticing, you know, what, or having an idea of what kind of potential that deer is going to have. So, but, you know, as far as the, what, you know, I can't remember. What were you asking right there at the end? I can't remember.
So, like, what are some of the things that help you when you find a specific deer sheds?
Oh, yeah.
Year after year.
Yeah.
Even if it's just 2 years in a row before.
Yeah, obviously the location of the shed is the biggest thing. Yeah. I mean, that is the big thing. It just helps pinpoint. I honestly don't like finding them. I mean, even though they're the easiest to find in food plots, I'd much rather find them in a travel corridor between food and bedding, or find it in their bedding. Or, you know, or right around there, because then that puts more of the pieces of the story together. Because most of the time our cameras are near the food plot because we're not keeping our cameras back in their bedding area, because obviously we don't want to go back in their bedding area. So I would prefer to find sheds in those areas. But with that said, every time you pick up a shed, it just tells that much more about that deer. And I don't know, I there's something about just, you know, finding one that, knowing that he's had that on his head and grew it the whole year, and just another, you know, piece of the puzzle. It's always exciting.
Yeah. Do you find that, like when you do find them on, you know, the trails and stuff like that, do you find that they keep those patterns for a certain period of time? Or is it yearly, or, you know, seasonally, however you want to put it?
Yeah. Especially when they're dropping their antlers, about, you know, now, we'll say, have you take that data, because you were telling us the last time we talked, you are data driven, you know, you record a lot.
Yeah.
Do you take that data and compare it to their August, September movements, their movements throughout the rut, and then when you're finding their sheds and even trail cam pictures that you got throughout March? But, you know, are you seeing some of these bucks that are doing, are in the same areas? Are you seeing just a whole change a lot of times after the rut's over?
No. I mean, typically, a lot of times I'll have some bucks that will show up and rut in a certain area. That buck my daughter was hunting that we talked about, I won't get pictures of him all summer long until about the beginning of October. And then he shows up and he'll stay there typically till right around February or so. And I picked up one of his sheds, you know, last year.
Wow.
Now he didn't drop last year till the 24th, which today is what, the 23rd. So he should be dropping tomorrow. So I should be able to go find. No, I mean, it's funny. I say
3 p.m.
that
you need to be out there.
Yeah,
right?
It's funny I say that, because honestly, I've noticed that pattern a lot throughout the years of certain bucks. I had a buck I called Sendero Buck. It's one of the deer that I've found 4 years of sheds to. And every year he was one of the, this was really before I was running trail cameras very much, but every year, he would drop. He would be like one of the last bucks to drop on the farm. He almost always dropped right about the first week of March, which is so hard. I mean, to stay out of, you know, off there till March. But it usually made for good shed hunts. I mean, because when I go in there,
they all had dropped.
Most of the deer had dropped by, you know, that first week or, you know, second week of March when I went in to look for his. But it's funny because I found his sheds really over a pretty big area, you know, for overall 4 years. When I look back at that, I mean, probably it was kind of in a big section that's maybe, you know, approximately a half mile by a half mile, you know, kind of surrounded by roads. And I've found some of his sheds on the front side of that section and some closer to the back side. I mean, a good, you know, almost a quarter mile away from each other. Not the same year, but, you know, from year to year.
Yeah,
right.
So it don't always hold true as far as, you know, there is no absolute, you know, when it comes to whitetails.
Right. Sure.
I think a big part of that is because of pressure, you know. I mean, a lot of times people go in and they bump deer. And then part of it is, you know, late season, they're looking for food. There's not a lot of food out there, so they have to move. You know, they have to go find, you know, wherever it's at. So that's like I said, one of the two biggest things is if you can be patient and wait till the deer drop, And I know that's not always possible, especially on public ground. Mm-hmm. But the other one is if you can find what they're feeding on, I mean, that's a big part of it. If you can find where they're feeding and where they're bedding, those two things, you know, are huge.
Now, well, and go ahead, Micah.
Well, when you go out there, do you do like a zigzag pattern? Or are you specifically
– Or do you focus on certain
features? Yeah. Like, this is where they're bedding. I'm going to go walk around their bedding. If I don't find it there – I'm going to go to the food or whatever.
Yeah, so they're bedding. I usually start at the beginning of the year. I usually walk food for quite a while. I mean, so I don't mind if I'm going to – I'll even shed hunt on farms that I know that I really don't want to shed hunt the whole farm. Mm-hmm. But I'll check food sources all, you know, usually the beginning of shed season, which for me is about – you know, beginning of February, maybe the third week of January.
I was going to say January 16th.
Yeah, I mean, it can be. But, again, you get back to, oh, I don't want to get out too soon. But yeah, some of those bigger deer a lot of times will drop sooner. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I assume it's because they probably rut a little harder, you know, chasing does.
A little more rundown.
And a lot of times, it's not always true because, right. Like I said, that one buck march every year. So, but, yeah, I usually shed hunt food at the beginning of the year, at least for the first couple weeks. And once I start getting into the bedding areas, I try not to get into the bedding areas till usually right around the middle of February. And then I'll hit them once, and then I'll leave them alone for about 3 or 4 weeks. And that's why, you know, I'll rotate to different places that I shed hunt. And unfortunately, I still have to work. If I could find a lot more sheds if I didn't have that dang job. But, I get out when I can.
Spend a lot more money, too, if you didn't have a job. Yeah. You're bored.
Right. But that's kind of what I go off of. I hunt the food plots first and then, you know, slowly start dipping back into the bedding areas. As far as zigzagging back and forth, snow is a great asset when it comes to shed season, especially early on. If you can, you know, get that good snow in February. Honestly, some of my best shed hunts ever have been after just like what happened. You know, you get a 4, 5, 6 inch snow, and then it all melts off. And the big key there is all the leaves are laid down, all the grass is laid down flat from the snow. And then if you can get kind of a cloudy day, after that, or that mm-hmm. right about that time that's happening, there's no, like, you know, the last couple days have been like ideal shed conditions minus the sun. It has been sunny, but like Thursday this week, the 25th, will be really good shed day. All the grass is still laid down real good, everything's wet, and it's supposed to be cloudy on Thursday. That'll be a real good day to get out, and you know, you don't get all those shadows cast, and you're not, you know, get the sun glaring in your face. So, I mean, I try to pay attention how I walk a property when it comes to the sun. I'll try to always, if the sun is out, I'm always trying to keep it at my back when I'm walking. So the sun is shining on the sheds, you know, versus mm-hmm. looking in and you're squinting and making sure you're wearing a billy, you know, your hat. And so, you know, those are kind of little tricks that I pay attention to. It's like, just like deer hunting, you know, it's not any one thing. Like I always tell everybody, yeah. it's all the little things that you pay attention to.
I was thinking, you know, food, bedding, mm-hmm. and then, you know, this time of year, it's so easy to find travel paths.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're just.
With the snow, especially.
Like, especially with the snow. They're just, boom, there they are. Everything's mm-hmm. dead, and you can see where they walk. And I was thinking, you know, that's probably the three areas that you would focus on is travel corridors, bedding, food. But yep. I never thought about, and it makes sense after you say it, you don't want to be in their bedding area every day because then they're not going to be there.
Yeah.
They're going to stop going there because you keep bothering them.
Yep.
And that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Yep. And it's tough. When you got snow on the ground, it's real beneficial. Like I said, especially bedding, you know, obviously you can see their trails a lot easier. But you can literally find a big deer's tracks and follow it right where it's, you know, right where it's living. Mm-hmm. And more often than not, it's going to take you right to where it's bedding. You know, sometimes it's hard to follow it. You get in an area where there's a high concentration of deer, and obviously those are harder areas because then you got tracks everywhere.
Yeah.
But it is interesting where you go, and they really like those little high points, you know, in woods or during this, you know, bad weather. Here, as of late, they really tuck into those cedar trees, not in the middle of like a cedar thicket, but they like those edges where if they do get pressured, you know, they can get out of there quick and disappear, and, you know, you never see them. So those are, you know, I concentrate on those areas of bedding, but the snow definitely helps. It makes it a little harder to see them, especially if it's a deep snow. Obviously, most of them will be covered up, and they get hard to see in that.
Sure, yeah.
But when it starts melting, boy, yeah. those are good days. Those can be really good days.
I go back to a day which probably has nothing to do with me never seeing this deer again, but I was walking one of the properties I hunt after the 2018 season, and it just snowed, and I was just, I think I was bored, and I thought, I'm going to go walk around and look for some sheds. It was middle February, and I'm in the snow, not being quiet, you know, just walking through the snow, and I get to this, I don't know how to explain them other than a curtain of vines. And I get from me to you, which is 5 feet for right. people listening, and all of a sudden this
it's
deer,
6 feet. We gotta keep six feet. Six,
yeah.
Six
oh yeah. Sorry. This deer stands up on the other side of this wall, a curtain, and takes off, and it's this deer that I had nicknamed Sub Zero, just running away.
Cool name, by the way.
Yeah. Mortal Kombat characters. And that's the last time I ever saw that deer alive.
Oh man.
No, I do take that back. The next year I saw him, he had busted off his entire right side, right before the season started. But it was cool to walk around there and see. I mean, he had been in there. He was chewing on little berries. It looked like he was bleeding, but those little berries. And
right.
He had laid down in 4, 5, 6 different spots just in that little area over the last 24 to 48 hours after that snow. Of course, he ran away with both antlers on.
Right.
So.
You're like, drop him.
As you're running. But that's pretty cool. I didn't think of that. Do you put any... Would you prefer to find a set of antlers together, or would you rather find an antler? Well, obviously.
Yeah.
Would you rather find an antler in one location and then the other one somewhere else?
I'd much rather find them together.
Really?
Just because of the simple fact of, yeah, it's done. You don't know how many times I've found one shed and spent, countless hours looking for the other side and never find it. It's like, how... I swear he picked it up and took it and hid it from me.
Yeah.
So, yeah, honestly, I would much rather find them together. It's way more exciting that way as well. But I would say on average, I'd say maybe 1 or 2 out of every 10 sheds I find, probably 1 out of every 10 I find as a set, you know, within. And that's saying even within like a 40, 50-yard area.
Mm-hmm.
More often than not, they drop one side and then you're – scouring forever for the other side. And a lot of times if it's a bigger shed, I stand a pretty good chance on finding it, or I feel that way. But sometimes you just
bigger, easier to find.
Yeah, bigger, easier to see. And but man, it doesn't always hold true. It can be, you know, you can spend a lot of time and on looking for them, and that, you know, you get into those stick areas where you can literally walk 6 foot from one and
never see,
you know,
it.
Right on the other side of a cedar tree, right. Yep. On the back side of a tree. I mean, it's just, yeah, one of the best sets I've ever found was a triple drop time buck that I think I showed you those sheds when you guys were here last time. Still probably one of my favorite set of sheds I've got. I went in and I was with my old lab, and we went through and we were working through, and we ended up finding one side. It literally, she grabs it like as I'm seeing it, and I was so excited. And we sit there for, gosh, probably an hour and a half, 2 hours after that. I'm just looking everywhere for the other side. Couldn't find it. Come back the next day, look everywhere, couldn't find it. My dad comes back with me, look everywhere, couldn't find it. Finally, I'm like, okay, we're going one last time. We're literally going to start where we found the first one, and we're just going to do circles and then move out like 5, 10 yards each time. And it was hilarious because he ended up finding it about 25 yards from the first shed.
Oh, man.
And it was on public ground. And they had been trimming some trees, and they come in and they threw, I don't remember if I told you guys this,
yeah.
They threw some brush right on top of the shed, and my dad got lucky and just happened to look down and saw the shed in there, and we were excited.
You probably walked over that?
Oh, I guarantee I walked within 3 or 4 yards of that shed more times than I want to count.
Yeah.
I mean, probably embarrassing, you know.
That's like, pretty cool.
Yeah, so that was, I mean, they blend in. Boy, they can really blend in. So,
well, you brought it up a second ago, but you also you have a dog that you
she's train. Laying right here.
Yeah, Faith, yep. right? Faith, her name. And then you had a dog prior. And so do you take her out with you every time?
Oh, yeah. I'd say 90% of the time. Sometimes when I'm after work, and like tonight, sure. I didn't have time to come get her, and sometimes I'll have the kids or somebody bring her to me and meet me, but it was far enough away. I just didn't want to mess with it. It was only going to be a quick 45-minute, walk tonight. So, but yeah, this is actually my second shed dog. My first one I had was the one I was just talking about. Her name was Whisper. It was a black lab, and I actually got that lab and trained her for bird hunting. Mm-hmm. Until she was about 5 years old, and then that's when I really started getting into shed hunting. And I'm like, this was 20 some years ago. So anyways I started training her at five on sheds, and she picked up really quick, honestly even quicker than this one has been picking up.
Really?
She was really natural at finding sheds. It's funny because different dogs learn different things at different rates, and this dog is way more Faith is, I have way more control with her. And as far as like, I worked her real hard when she was younger on hand signals and all basic commands. And she really took to that. Where my old lab, I just kind of took her and just worked her on sheds and didn't really work her as much on the other things, on hand signals and everything. And so she does really great on, if I want her to go any direction, I can send her in any direction, and she, listens well, and she covers real well, but she just hasn't really picked up on the shed aspect of it real good yet. It's just beginning, I guess we're about halfway through her second season, so she's just now two.
Yeah, I mean.
So she's young.
Right.
And I'm sure she'll get there. She's found, a few by herself, but working with dogs, I just love having that extra one, because like I said, there's so many times where I'm usually scanning out in front of me when I'm walking, anywhere from 10 to 30, 40 yards out. So if I can have a dog working that 10 yard area and in towards me at my feet, back and forth, that's where I want my dog working if I can. Now my old lab would disappear sometimes, and she'd show up with a shed in her mouth, which I was all about that. There's no better
wish
feeling.
I knew where you got that.
Yeah, there's no better feeling than looking up and seeing your dog coming back with your shed. I mean, I say no better feeling, but it's pretty exciting, after you spent that much time working with them. But her, I haven't really had that happen yet. Everyone she's picked up, I've pretty much seen her where she's dropped down on it, which is fine. She tends to work a little closer, but it just kind of what you prefer,
Did you have any sort of go into it with any sort of training on how to train the dog, or did you just like, I want her to do this, so I'm just going to keep on repeating that process? Or
so my first lab, I trained her on hand signals a little bit too, and I watched another buddy of mine and I kind of were training our dogs at the same time, and we got into a video series. I can't even remember what it was, but it was hand signals for dogs, mm-hmm. basically. And that's one thing when you're bird hunting. It's a huge deal. If your dog doesn't see the bird go down, then you got to be able to direct it on which direction to go. So working her, that's almost kind of a, I almost wonder if it kind of hindered her a little bit, because I worked her so much on hand signals. And then when I started working her on sheds out in the yard and just, having her find them, she would find them all right. But I noticed her really looking back at me a lot, like wanting me to give her direction on mm-hmm. where to go. And I almost think that was maybe a little bit of a mistake. I wish I would have worked her on finding sheds first and then slowly introduced the hand signals instead of being so,
dependent,
it's almost,
on you,
almost dependent. Like,
instead of independent.
She, yeah, I think her idea is, I know when we go out, she thinks I know where every shed's at. And unfortunately, I wish I did, but
where
I don't.
Where is it, Daddy?
So she's used to me working her in the yard. And there's three sheds. I shouldn't say this, but there's three sheds in my yard right now.
I can go find
somewhere.
My first shed ever.
Yes. Right. Now I'm going to have people walking around my house at night looking for my sheds. But I'll leave sheds out for a considerable amount of time just to try to let the scent get off of them, so when she goes and looking, and that's the other thing with this one, she goes a lot off of scent, and they sell an antler scent that you can put on there. I don't know if it's like too strong of a scent, and obviously not every antler is fresh when you got in the woods. So I've really been working with her on the sheds that I got in the yard, or like out in pretty open spaces, because I want her to get to where she can see the shed and go after it instead of trying to smell everything. I mean, it's natural for a labs dog and dogs that use its nose.
Yeah,
right.
And which I've seen her totally turn on a couple big sheds out in the field, and like I can see it plain as day, and she's working, and she don't see it, but I can see her get on the downwind side, and boy, she'll hit the brakes, and the bird, you know, tail starts wagging, starts getting birdie, and goes right to it. So I know she uses her nose a lot. And there's unfortunately just some sheds, once they've been on the ground for a considerable amount of time, I just don't think they hold a scent, you know, or not much of one.
Okay. Is she a lab also, or is she
She's a silver lab.
Okay, I was going to say, she looks like
beautiful.
She looks kind of like a Weimaraner.
And so there's been a lot of discussion. So when I first started looking for, I wanted a chocolate when we found her. At first, and I know there's a lot, hopefully you don't get any hate mail or any haters, because I know there's a lot of breeders out there that don't, you know, don't consider the silver lab an actual lab, which, you know, maybe that's the case. I'm not here to argue that.
It's news to me. I don't know anything about labs.
Yeah, but I kind of found out afterwards, because we had a few people through Heartland Bowhunter that's like, oh, I'm never going to watch your show again. And
are you serious?
Yeah.
Wow.
And I'm like, hey, look, I was like, I'm not trying to offend anybody. I understand where they're coming from. But to me, I mean, I think she's a beautiful dog. She works well, you know. But yeah, she's considered a silver lab. We bought her from a breeder down south of here, a couple hours.
So is it technically considered a genetic weakness?
Yeah. So that color is, I guess, from reading, is not like an actual color that a lab will have. So they're still registered, but you register them under like a chocolate color. But there's other colors of labs also. I can't remember what the color is right now, but it's like a, kind of like a, I don't want to call it burgundy. I can't remember the name of it, but it's kind of like a between a yellow and like a reddish color.
Yeah.
Real pretty, you know, labs. But again, they're the same kind of deal where they have to be registered under.
It's the same with my dog's a German Shepherd, and I've learned a lot about German Shepherds since owning him, and he's what's considered a Black Sable German Shepherd. Mm-hmm. And there's all these different types of colors that are breed standards. Mm-hmm. Well, apparently the white German Shepherd is considered a genetic weakness, and they're not a recognized quote unquote breed.
Right.
Color, and I think there's another color that's not recognized, and I mean, you can get pretty into the weeds on it for sure, but so I get it. I mean, every breed has certain things that are
right.
I wouldn't give a crap.
No, yeah, I mean, no, I don't care.
Yeah.
Either.
Yeah,
I got two. Well, I mean, they're probably pit bulls, but I have no idea. I mean, they're mutts to me, but they're just
they are.
A dog can. Yeah,
yeah.
A dog that can find sheds, that's good in my book for sure.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I mean, it's funny because, you know, I belong to a few different shed, you know, pages online on Facebook and Instagram, and you see every walk, every breed of dog that people try to, you know, go teach and shed hunt. So, I mean, it's, if it'll go pick up an antler, then so be it.
Yeah,
but,
that's
yeah,
awesome.
I mean, that's kind of what, I mean, I've always loved the looks of labs, and then when we found, you know, this one, my wife actually found the silver lab is a puppy online, and you know, we kind of looked at them a little bit, but they were all like crazy expensive. Like, well, I say for me anyways, $1,500, you know, or more for one. And then we got lucky and found her for $500. She was the last one in that litter. And I sent my wife, I was like, well, go down and look at her, which pretty much you said your wife.
You know it's going to happen.
It's a puppy. Yeah, you're in trouble.
Yeah, yeah, no doubt. But she's been so much fun. She's just, and not even just shed hunt. I mean, she is like the happiest dog I've ever owned. I mean, she has got the best mood, and just, you know, we've really enjoyed having her around just as a family pet, not only a shed dog, but
well,
yeah.
And you take her out with you, and I mean, it's you kind of have that camaraderie with her.
Oh yeah!
Every time you go out with her, and
yeah,
you know, training her is more things you're doing with them. And I always wondered how you trained them. So essentially, you just start off not to get too in detail on training a dog, but you essentially start off by introducing an antler to her, and this is the scent that I want you finding.
Yeah, that's kind of, I mean, the only two things I ever really play with her is, I don't really play with her in antlers because I don't like going and throwing them so much. I mean, just because I don't want her having that idea of, I know where everyone's at, and I throw it out and then you go get it. Because if we go out shed hunting, she's like, okay, well, where's the antler?
Yeah.
You're not carrying an antler to throw me. So I've been real careful with that. But as far as we kind of mentioned about the scent that, you know, they have that antler scent that you can add to an antler, which I've kind of mixed emotions on that a little bit. I'm sure, you know, I have used that a little bit, but what I've done in the past is like, I tried to, the last couple of years, I find a few sheds and I'll make sure I, you know, have a rubber glove on or something, no scent. And I put it in a bag and I keep about four or five, you know, in a scent free bag that I'll put, you know, that I worker on around here. So when I reach in there to grab it, I'll use it. And then when I'm done with it, I, you know, try to clean it with hot water, any slobber she's put on anything, you know, try to get it as scent free as possible and then put it back in that bag. And, you know, hopefully that kind of contains that antler smell to it. But, I mean, like any dog, the first things you want to do, you got to have control of your dog. I mean, you don't want to go.
Obedience.
Yeah, you don't want to go out and let the dog out of the truck and it's the last time you see the dog. So, I mean, obedience, obviously, is the number.
So, you can't take Tango.
No, I got a funny story about that, actually. It happened tonight. I need to repair my fence. But anyways, Tango, every once in a while, he'll get out. And he just roams the neighborhood. He'll eventually come back.
He comes home, but he just is gone.
He'll eventually come back, but I don't like him being out there, you know, with the road and everything like that.
Right.
So, Amy, on my way home from work, Amy texts me, hey, Tango got out again. I'm like, okay. So, I get home. Like, he hasn't come back yet. Nope, hasn't made it. I'm like, okay, well, I'll go out and look for him. I drove around probably 30, 45 minutes. Oh, no. I come back. Still ain't made it. Like, nope. All of a sudden, he comes out from the back door. Or he was in the bathroom. In our room. I was like, are you serious?
No, that's funny.
I mean,
that's funny.
Yeah, you know, because usually, I mean, like I said, he always comes back within 30, 45 minutes or something like that. I'm like, he still hasn't made it? And I'm like, that's just weird. You know, I don't like that. I usually at least see him, you know, I'll drive and he usually hits up a few neighbors and talks to their dog for a little bit and you know, doesn't really do much. But so I was kind of freaking out, and I was like, "Oh man, this ain't good." I didn't see him. I didn't see him nowhere. But he likes to get in our bath. We have a little half bath in our room, and it's got a little nook underneath the sink. And that's where he sleeps. He's got his own little bed in there, and he must have just been tucked in there, and Amy didn't notice it.
That's funny.
Yeah,
it's hilarious.
It was quite humorous. I was a little irritated, but it was pretty funny there. So
yeah,
Hazel, though, on the other hand, if I could get her to trained up on antlers, she would be really good, because I can take her and we go anywhere. I can, no leash, nothing, she's right there on my hip most of the time. So
yeah.
I mean, she might be too far gone. I don't know how old a dog, you know, they say you can't teach an old dog to do tricks. I don't know if that's true or not, but I mean, it's worth a shot, I guess.
That other one I had, she was, like I said, I didn't even start working her till 5, and she was, you know, by the time she was 7, she was, you know, on it. I mean, she was really good. But yeah, I mean, the main thing is the beginning, obedience. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, like I said, you got to have control of your dog. And then, the next thing I worked with Faith on was hand signals, which I don't know if I'll do that next time. I don't think I'll hit it that hard and, you know, really drill it into them that much next time. But, you know, and I'm sure there's a ton of amazing videos. I know there's a kennel club some up north of here,
Smithville.
By Smithville, that trains sheds dogs.
Yeah, me, my brother, and another friend, David Jones. We actually QDMA back when it was QDMA. They did a I don't know, it was some event out there, and we got to go up there, and he showed us how he works the dogs and stuff like that. It was pretty cool. I mean, it's a pretty cool outfit.
Yeah, I'm sure that would be a really good place. I mean, especially if you can afford to have your dog trained.
Sure.
I enjoy the training process, and I really want the dog to respond well to me and kind of build that, you know, bond and, you know, friendship. I couldn't imagine taking my dog to have someone train it, but that's just me, you know.
Yeah.
Personally, a lot of people don't want to spend that much time or don't have the time,
I'm sure I wouldn't even want to know how many hours you probably have in working.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so
yeah.
It's a lot just training a dog in general. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a process for sure.
Yeah. No doubt. But she really shines well with a dog, I think, when you get into those thickets. You know, when you're in an open field, obviously, there's not a big need for a dog. If you're in pretty open timber, again, not a giant need. But you get into those bedding areas where you can't cover everything. I mean, and just, you know, too thick. That's when your, you know, a dog will really help you out.
Come in handy. I can see that.
For sure.
Yeah. I don't want to walk through that.
Yeah. Even then. Yeah. For sure.
Well, I mean, and, you know, for people who don't have dogs or aren't going to have shed hunting dogs, you also gave a lot of good tips on the other side. I think one main thing that I learned on this was, and it makes sense when you say it, but it never crossed my mind, is to, if you're going to be shed hunting a piece of private ground especially,
yeah,
don't go in there and just walk every day and blow it up, because you could have maybe found a set of sheds off of a monster you were after, but after the fourth straight day of bumping him out of his bed, and you might not even known it, you might have just been,
because
you're probably not paying attention to the wind when you're shed hunting. So, you know, you're just walking with the wind to your back, and you blow him out 300 yards away four straight days, and the fifth day he goes, you know what, I'm going somewhere else. I'm tired of this.
Yeah.
And, you know, now he's living somewhere else for the next 2 months, and he drops him over there.
Right.
So that makes a lot of sense. I didn't even really think of it that way.
Yeah. If I'm by myself, I usually don't pay attention to the wind. I pay more attention to where the sun's at if the sun's out.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm with my dog, obviously I pay attention to the wind then, because she needs the wind. But that is such a huge thing. And I mean, who knows how many people are shed hunting around you that are running deer onto you. And if you're not pushing them off, you're going to be finding sheds of deer that may even not live on you all the time. You know, so I mean, it's a huge, that's one of the hardest things for most shed hunters is being patient and to stay out.
And that could compound itself. You know, if they keep bumping them off of that property, I mean, it could go into hunting season.
Oh, yeah.
No, you know, that just might stay on you altogether.
Yep. I totally agree. I mean, any time a deer feels uncomfortable because it's not, and I say any deer, I mean, I'm mainly talking about the mature, you know, 4, 5, 6-year-old deer that just don't take too much pressure. I mean, they just don't take as much as your average, you know, year and a half old deer that, you know, will stand up and look at you and not know what's really going on. It's not a big deal to them. They haven't really learned, you know, the ins and outs of staying alive yet.
Right.
So, yeah, that's
that yearling, comes to the base of your tree every night and just looks up at you, and or not even look up at you, just hangs out around you for an hour and a half.
Right. Watches you like climb out of your tree stand and walk away, and just sits there and watches you.
Yeah.
Or vice versa, watches you climbing into it.
You almost want to like throw a wet newspaper at him and be like, stop being so stupid.
Right. Yep. I mean, they gotta learn. It just takes them a few years. But
yeah. Well, awesome. Well, you know, this is shed hunting season.
Yeah.
Like I said, people aren't going to probably hear this till the beginning of March. We're recording on February 23rd, but this is the time of the year. I mean, people have already been out. I know. I've been seeing stuff on the old social media.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And but,
yeah, you know, if it hits in March 1st and you haven't been out yet, that's the perfect time to go.
Definitely
yeah.
need
I mean,
to go.
That's when you want it. That's really, if I could stay out of every place, you know,
yeah,
I would say March 1st would be like the best time, or even like the middle of March if you can wait that long. But there's that fine line of once you want to hit it before everything starts greening up, because as soon as those bushes start, then it gets
harder,
way harder to see.
That, and if depending on how long they're on the ground, the squirrels get
exactly.
to them,
yeah.
mice. Up and yeah. mice and things like yeah. that too. All right. So
the best thing, just like deer season, if you got trail cameras, utilize them.
Yep.
I mean, because they'll tell you when it's time to go.
Yeah, Friday night I was driving to my parents, and 4 bucks crossed the road. It was right before dark when I was driving over there, and 4 bucks crossed the road that were decent, you know, 120-inch type mm-hmm. of bucks, all with each other, and all 4 of them had both sets,
mm-hmm.
or both sides still on. So.
I saw a group of 3 the other day. One was a decent, and then the other 2 were just little 4-pointers or whatnot. But
there's plenty of them holding on. So
And it's one other quick thing. It's amazing how often you find, because you said, you know, you got 4 deer, and they're all the – I mean, this is a time of year bucks are bachelor grouped up. So typically if you find one shed, usually other bucks are around, and they're serious. I mean, there's so many times I find 2 or 3 sheds in an area – and they may be from 2 or 3 different deer.
Yeah.
So, that's a very – I joke around sometimes. I wonder if it's like a yawn. When one yawns, another person yawns. When one deer drops an antler, another deer drops an antler. Because it's amazing how often I'll find,
sheds
from different bucks together.
Yeah. Oh, makes sense.
Very cool.
That's awesome. Well, we appreciate you coming on and talking about some shed hunting.
Oh,
it's
no problem.
It's a fun thing for a lot of people to do this time of year. There's not a whole lot. I don't mean to say that, because there is plenty of things to do in the outdoors right now.
Oh, yeah.
But as far as the popular things, I guess you'd say, quote-unquote, out there, you know, duck season's over, goose hunting's kind of winding down, or it might even be over at this point. I'm not sure if the season is over now or not.
Snow geese, I think.
Okay,
yeah,
still.
Snow geese. Right,
you know, so there's just not a lot of things going on other than, like, we're doing a lot of coyote hunting. There's, mm-hmm. we love that. But, you know, so a lot of people get out this time of year and do start shed hunting. So be nice to talk to, from what I know, the best shed hunter I've ever met.
I know, sure. I know a few good ones too. There's no doubt. I've been doing it a long time and been fortunate. And my dad's helped find a lot of these, I should say, as well. He,
yeah,
him and I always, you know.
You'll never have to buy another set of rattling antlers.
No, that is for sure. I can kind of pick and choose what deer I want to use. But I think, yeah, the next step, you know, we're talking about people doing a lot in the outdoors too. One of the things that we're really starting to get ready to gear up to is obviously for turkey season, we're excited. But even before then, our food plots are getting ready to come up. So for those of you out there that are, you know, going to be planting food plots for next year, this is the time, especially for frost seeding, clover, mm-hmm. and stuff like that.
I read about, those you might have told it, it might have been you that told me about frost seeding.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going with clover. Clovers, yeah. I remember that from last time.
Clover, chicory are usually your ones that you're frost seeding, uh-huh. you know, because it's such a small seed, it can find its way in. Those are usually what you're frost seeding right now. And the nice thing about it is if you're a lazy farmer, if you will, and don't like to spend a lot of time with food plots, if you've got an area that is somewhat, you know, where you can get a little bit of soil contact, this is the time of year to throw that clover out there, and it'll you know, green up pretty quick, and it comes up, and we'll, if it comes up good, it'll, you know, help choke some of that other stuff out.
Yeah.
It's always a great food plot that's good almost throughout the whole season. So
good. Awesome. Well, Ty, thanks for coming on with us and talking about some shed hunting. We appreciate you coming on again. Mike, you got anything for him before we hop off?
I don't think so, man.
Well, thanks again, sir.
Hey, no, I appreciate it. It's always fun talking to you guys, and I need to hit you guys up when we're done here for some more coyote tips, because I'm about as novice as could be when it comes to coyote hunting.
I don't know if we're much better, but we'll try.
Yeah. We've maybe picked up a few little tips here and there.
Yeah, we have.
We've definitely had a lot of fun with it. That's
yes,
for sure.
We sure have.
Oh, good.
So, all right, Ty. Well, thanks, man.
Yep, thank you guys. Have a good
one. We'll see you. All right, that's the show today.
Yeah, we want to give a big thank you to Ty for inviting us over to his house again and, you know, giving us all the information that he has.
Faith was down here keeping us company for most of the episode. She disappeared now, so I don't know where she went, but
She thought you stunk, so she was like, I'm getting out of here.
He doesn't smell like shed antlers.
Yeah. I wonder how he keeps her from chewing up all the sheds that he has all around his house. Because, I mean, we're looking at, you know, countless sheds, and I didn't see one in her mouth. So she might not be as good of a shed hunter as we think she is. No, either that or he's got her trained very well. So
I'm going to go with the second one.
There you
I'm
go.
I'm going to go with the second one.
But
so thanks to thanks to Ty again. So go, obviously, most of our listeners probably know who Heartland Bowhunter is, but check them out. They've got some also awesome content, videos from the entire season.
Mm-hmm.
Some are still coming out. So go check them out. I'm guessing it's at Heartland Bowhunter and Heartland Bowhunter on Facebook. I just know that they're on there, so I don't ever pay attention to what the handle is, but give them a check them out and check out their videos, their top notch.
Absolutely. They have the best, I think they have the best production out of any of the hunting shows.
And sneak peek, Ty mentioned that they might be doing some videos about shed hunting coming up. So
I don't know when that would drop, but
who knows, but it's going to be coming, I'm guessing. So
that'd be pretty cool.
Anyways, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to y'all later.
See ya.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.